Bill Belichick just sitting down to join us after a wild win, a late game last night. But, of course, the Patriots coming back from 24 down at the half. Coach, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Sure, nice night of sleep last night after that?
Well, not much, but it was, yeah, what I got was good. Yeah, it was what a difference a week makes, right?
How much does the weather affect that game as you're watching it and you're pretty bundled up on the sideline? Clearly, the ball was on the ground 11 times over the course of the entirety of the game. How much and how was the weather affecting it?
Well, I think it definitely affected it, no question about it. The wind was, I think, probably a bigger factor than the cold, but say both components were there. And so the wind, you know, affects the kicking game first and then the passing game, and the cold affects the ball handling a little bit. So, you know, all those were, you know, part of the elements. That's why we try to go outside and practice in whatever we get every day. So whenever it comes up, we at least have been out there in it.
Bill, tell us about some of the things that were going through your mind as the captains were at midfield for the coin flip. You're thinking, all right, if we get the ball, we do this. If they get the ball, they do that. Just like the two or three scenarios that you're thinking about as the coin is in the air.
Talking about in overtime?
Yeah, in overtime, yes.
Well, I met with the captains, you know, for a couple seconds before we went out there and just explained to them what we wanted to do, that we wanted to, if we won the toss, take the win, and if we lost the toss, if they took the ball, that we wanted to defend the lighthouse end. And, you know, there was a couple questions to make sure it was right, and, you know, but I think we got it right. You know, everybody walked out there and understood what we were trying to do, so. I kind of expected, to be honest with you, if they won the toss, that they would take the ball and we would defend that end. And if we won the toss, that we would defend that end and they would take the ball. So I was pretty confident that it would come out that way. But you always have to wait and see. If it had been the other way, then we would have dealt with that.
How exactly does the wind affect? I think I get a pretty good idea how it affects the kicking game. It's a lot more difficult to kick into the wind. But it seemed as if three or four of the drives for both teams last night were into the wind. How much was the wind affecting the game outside of the kicking game?
I think that throwing the ball to our sideline, where our bench was, that the ball kind of died a little bit. And throwing the ball to their sideline, I thought it sailed a little bit. So I think just the, not that it couldn't be done, but just the touch on the balls, depending on which way you're throwing it, was a little bit different for the quarterbacks. We saw that in pregame warm-up. And you know, from a field position standpoint, I thought that there was approximately a 20-yard difference in field goal range, somewhere around the 25-yard line going toward the lighthouse, and maybe, you know, between the 40 and the 45-yard line going in the other direction. And the wind was gusting, so it wasn't exactly the same all the time, but and I felt like that was a pretty big disparity, and, you know, had the Broncos been going the other way in overtime, I think they would have been at field goal range, but going the direction they did and they chose to punt, which I think I would have done in that same situation. That's kind of where the differential was in, as I saw it, in terms of field position.
So your decision was just, was it just about the kicking game or was it about both?
Well, yeah, I think it affected both, but, you know, the win definitely affects the kicking game more than it affects the passing game. Although it does affect both.
I don't know if you think this way or not, but you wonder about the worst case scenario, and they get the ball and score a touchdown and it's over. Were you thinking about, oh man, you know, what if they do this, or were you confident enough that based on what you just said, one side of the field the ball was dying, the other side of the field not so much, you were confident that you could take the information that you had and kind of design your defense where you weren't going to get you weren't going to wind up in a situation where in a vulnerable defense?
Well, I'd say that's pretty much the way it was the whole game. You know, the first quarter and overtime were similar in that respect. It just came down to whether we kept them out of the end zone on that first drive. If we kept them out of the end zone on the first drive, then I felt like we would have the advantage. And of course, if they scored a touchdown, the game would have been over, and sure, there'd be a lot of questions about the decision.
A little bit.
But as it turned out, you know, once we were able to make the first stop, or even if they'd gotten the field goal, it would have meant that we wouldn't have to have gotten as close to the goal line as they would have had to get to kick a field goal going the other way. And so, you know, the big key was keeping them out of the end zone, and fortunately we were able to do that. And then, you know, on the last punt, you know, Ryan did a real good job of getting the ball up in the air. It was a hard ball to handle, and, you know, we got a good break on that when it hit the ground, and it hit Carter, and Nate recovered it. So, you know, again, those things all were made a little bit easier by the direction that we were going.
Well, you mentioned some of the questions that would be there today if they had gone down, excuse me, if they had gone down and scored a touchdown. One of my favorite parts of a football life from 2009, you were talking about fourth and two, and you were talking to the team, and you said, look, I'm not afraid to make bold decisions. I'm not afraid to put us in a position to win the game, do what I think is best, and I'll deal with the criticism. There would have been tremendous criticism, as you said. When did you get to the point where that doesn't bother you? I could be wrong, but I don't imagine you get up first thing in the morning and turn a WEEI to see what people are saying about you or wondering about or worrying about the criticism. When did you get to that point?
No, it's a good question. I kind of feel like it's always been that way. I just feel like as a head coach, you got to do what you feel is best for your football team. It doesn't always work out the way you want it to, and there's criticism when it doesn't. I understand that, but I think you've still got to try to make the best decision, and whatever the circumstances, whatever information you have that you think gives your team the best chance to win, that's what we're out there for. So I feel like that's my obligation to the team. And obviously, if it doesn't work out, nobody feels worse about it than I do. And sometimes it's the wrong decision. In retrospect, maybe I think about it and go back and think, well, you know what, I really should have done something else. But at the time, you do what you think's best. And I think the big thing on that one was, as I think I talked about before, was just in the '86 championship game when Coach Parcells took the wind in the championship game against the Redskins. And you know, that was a, you know, you win the toss and you take the wind, and in the second half, you don't get the ball back. You know, that's not the way it works back then. But he did that, and you know, we ended up getting a 17-0 lead at the end of the first quarter with the win, and they held up the rest of the game. And that was a big, you know, it was a big part of the game. And I always remember, you know, that, and talking to him about that as well, that, you know what, sometimes that's just the right thing to do, and that's more important than possession of the ball and, you know, being able to control field position and, you know, have that advantage is sometimes worth it. And when you're only playing one quarter, like you are in overtime, you know, I felt like that advantage was worth the risk of not having the ball first.
Let's take you back to the beginning of this game. You watch your team go out there. You've prepped all week. You had one fewer day than normal, but you prep all week for this game. You got a game plan. It seems like you're executing it fairly well. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like all the wheels came off the track at once. Fumble, fumble, fumble. And the next thing you know, you guys are down 24-0. What are you thinking as you're watching that take place on the field?
Well, that the good things that we were doing were overridden by the bad things that were much worse than the good things. You know, we get a 3-and-out to start the game. We, you know, we kick off, defer, kick off, get the stop, get the ball, start moving it down the field, and then lose possession of the ball. And, you know, as you said, you already detailed it for me there. We're going to go through it again. So, but yeah, exactly. Then we, you know, made a stop on defense, you know, with bad field position, but then we, you know, gave up a long drive later in the second quarter. And so we just didn't play very consistently in any phase of the game. And, you know, we go in there at halftime and we didn't feel like everything we were doing was wrong, but we just had too many bad plays in there that offset the good ones that we had. And we just talked about trying to string the good ones together. You know, you can't score 24 points in one drive. You just can't do it. You got to just, you know, get the ball, score, make a stop on defense, string together some good plays, and don't worry about the score. Just worry about the process. Just worry about executing good plays, and then hope that that when you start stringing a couple of them together, that, you know, it'll start to work out for you. And we got the turnovers in the third and fourth quarter there, and those were huge for us, and we converted them to touchdowns, which was obviously huge as well. And our red area play offensively was good, and that was, I don't want to say the difference, but without it, we would have, things wouldn't have ended up where they did. So getting the ball in the end zone and taking advantage of those opportunities in the second half was key.
Obviously, you made some personnel changes at halftime. I'll ask you about those, I guess, here in a second. Some of the guys that came in more in the second half. But how are you? I know you don't have a lot of time in there at the half, and everybody's wondering, is Bill going to go in there and rip the team and scream at them and overturn the Gatorade bottles, or is it calm? Is it just about X's and O's? How do you make that decision heading into the locker room how you're going to handle the team at halftime, and how'd you make it last night?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I think, you know, it's like anything else. If you talk about something and, you know, you just don't do it, then that's, you know, that's really a problem. If you, you know, are trying to do what you want to do, but it's just not working out, or maybe they've made some adjustments, or something's happened, and you feel like, well, the team's really trying to respond, but for whatever reason, the scoreboard's not reflecting that, then that's something else. So, you know, I think the halves were a little bit different the last 2 weeks. I was a lot more disappointed in the way we played in the first half in Carolina than I was yesterday, even though we had plenty of problems yesterday, but we just, you know, we made mistakes that really hurt ourselves that I, you know, I felt like we could overcome if we just got those straightened out. And I felt like we could do that last week, but it just, you know, the things that happened in the Carolina game just, you know, really, I don't think we played the way we wanted to play. At least we were trying to play the way we wanted to play last night. I didn't really feel like that in Carolina. In the second half, we did a much better job of that as we did last night.
You know, those mistakes, one of those mistakes was made by Stephen Ridley. And in terms of what he says after the game, he seems, just from observation from afar, he seems like a kid who really wants to do the right thing, who is truly bothered by the mistakes that he's making in the game. Yesterday, after the game, he said he was disgusted with himself, some of the things he did. What do you do with him? I mean, he's a talented running back, obviously. He's been productive for you. Talk to him. Let him figure it out on his own. You know, what's the approach with Stephen Ridley? This is a couple of weeks in a row where he's had some problems handling the ball.
Yeah, well, we talk to the team every week about ball security. We work on drills. We talk about the importance of it. We talk about how the other team, what our opponents do to get the ball out, what kind of techniques they employ, or how they've gotten their turnovers, if there's a common thread, or you know, something that's happened repeatedly with our opponents and what we've got to be careful of. But, well, look, we all know in there that ball possession is critical to our success. That's everybody that handles the ball, from the center and a quarterback, which we've you know, botched a couple of those exchanges, which has resulted in turnovers this year, with interceptions, fumbles, drop kicks, you know, you name it. Any way that you lose the ball is you know, detrimental to the team, and it's a big point of emphasis every week. So that isn't going to change, and it's everybody's responsibility to the team to take care of the football if they touch it, in whatever manner they touch it in, snap, hold, kick, pass, catch, run, whatever. So we've got to do a better job of ball security. We had the ball on the ground 6 times in the first half. I mean, it's just, we can't win doing that.
All right, look, I'm not going to compare the NFL to college football. This is a man's league, and even though Ridley played in the SEC, the best that the college football has to offer, it's not the NFL, but is there anything in his history that suggests that ball security would be an issue, or is it something that he needs to change technique-wise that he's been doing throughout his career?
Yeah, I don't think any of our backs have an issue that's that I would say is, you know, would prevent them from being a productive player. I think it's something that look, there are some plays that happen in football that are just plays that happen in football, and then there's other plays that are caused by you know, lack of discipline, lack of technique, or just carelessness, and those are the ones we got to eliminate. You know, there's going to be plays that happen that I don't want to say you can't prevent them, but sometimes that's just the way it goes. But there are the plays that we got to do everything we can to prevent from losing the ball, and we just got to do a better job of that. We got to coach it better, and the guys who handle the ball got to handle it better.
You talk a lot. I've heard you mention the phrase a few times, all three phases of the game, and last night ends on a couple of special teams plays. What exactly, as you understand, at least in your system, is the job of the returner standing at about his own 15-yard line like it was at the end of the game last night? What is his job there, especially once the ball ends up going short?
Well, I mean, I can't tell you exactly what Denver did or didn't do. I don't really know. But in Julian's case, when he's the deep returner, single returner, which, as you know, last night and last week, there were several situations where we had two guys back there, and part of that was because of the conditions. But regardless, when it is one guy back there, it's his job to try to get to every ball he can get to and handle it cleanly. If there's a ball that he can't handle, then we don't want him to try to make a desperate attempt to catch the ball and fumble it, so or muff it. So, you know, ball security is the most important thing. If he can cleanly handle the ball, then he should handle it. If he can't, then he should get away from it and make sure that he signals and communicates to his teammates to let them know that, you know, it's on the ground and that they should stay away from it. You know, that play, when the ball came down, I don't know if it hit Carter on the way down or it hit him as soon as it hit the ground, but it almost hit him as it came down, or maybe it did hit him as it came down. So he was, you know, right. The ball was right there where he was, and I think had the returner been there, then I think that Carter probably wouldn't have run into the returner, that he would have somehow, you know, he would have seen him and avoided him. But, you know, when you're trying to hold up the guys on the punt team and you're running and you're concentrating on your guy and, you know, you see the returner, of course you try to stay away from the returner, but you don't know where the ball is. And so, you can be at risk on that. That's one of the things we talked about before the game, which in wind conditions is, it usually works the other way, to tell you the truth. Usually when you're punting into it, like what happened on our, we had a punt that was a shorter punt, and I think it hit Ebner, if I'm not mistaken, and just kind of bounced and kicked into him. But you see that a lot more frequently when you're punting into the wind. The coverage team's running down there. The punt return team's running with their guys. The ball hits the ground. It bounces back toward the line of scrimmage and, you know, can hit those guys. They're not aware of it. So, you know, that's the type of play that, if you're on the punt return team and they're punting into the wind, you want to really try to be more aggressive at the line of scrimmage. Try to get them before they get down the field rather than try to block them 30 yards downfield and find out the ball's hit the ground and now it hits you and, you know, that type of thing. You try to take them on a little bit earlier.
Chris Collinsworth, twice on the broadcast last night, talked about how you guys have a left-footed punter and his conversations with you, the flight of the ball or picking up the ball from a left-footed punter is something guys aren't used to, or it's tougher. It gives them a different look. Could you elaborate on that if that's an accurate representation of the conversation you guys had?
Well, yeah, sure. We've talked about that. I mean, that's no secret. It's like a left-handed pitcher and a right-handed pitcher in baseball. The ball breaks the opposite way, so everything's the same. It's just the opposite. I think the hard thing really is whatever the difference is between your punter. So if you have a right-footed punter, handling left-footed punter is different because you've handled right-footed punters, you know, most of the time in practice and all the way through the season and vice versa. And so, you know, having a left-footed punter, for us, the right-footed punter gives you the opposite spin, opposite break on the ball. So if the ball doesn't turn over, it breaks. On a right-footed punter, it would break to the returner's right. And if the ball turns over, for a right-footed punter, it would break to the returner's left, and vice versa, the left-footed punter. So, you know, I think it's more of a habitual thing, what you get used to catching, what you're used to seeing. You get into a game, and it's, you know, each kicker's got a little different style, but the basic dynamics of aerodynamics of the ball and the flight are the same, that you're just now looking at it in reverse. And then when you add the wind conditions into that, that also affects the flight of the ball, too. Instead of having a kind of normal arc and where it, you know, reaches the peak and then falls, you know, in wind, it obviously carries more, and against the wind, it comes away from the returner. In some cases, it even breaks back toward the line of scrimmage, so it's actually dropping away from him, which we've also seen on kickoffs as well, kicking into the wind. Devin McCourty had one of those balls where he had to come up, and the kick, just as it dropped, it kind of, you know, was moving away from him, not down towards him like it usually is, because the wind had held it up. So, you know, those are tough judgment plays for a returner.
So into the wind, and I got just a couple more questions for you, then the coach's question, but into the wind last night, field goal range for you guys is what yard line?
Well, I would say in that game last night, it was would have been inside the 25-yard line.
Wow.
And again, we're not just talking about distance. We're talking about getting it through the uprights because the wind was also blowing from our bench, well, from kind of the corner in the lighthouse to the opposite corner down at the other end of the field. So it wasn't straight across the field. It was kind of a quartering wind. So, you know, kicking into the wind, it's not just getting it there. It's at the end of the kick that wind is going to, the ball's going to die, and it's going to push it, you know, so you kind of got to hook it in the further out you are, which is a tough kick. And the same thing at the other end, kicking with the wind, it's, you know, it's not so much distance as it is, as the ball dies, the wind would push it towards the Broncos sideline and, you know, tend to move it pretty far to the right. I mean, you know, like making a longer putt with a break in the green. So, you know, that's a tough kick for a kicker because the last 10 yards of the kick as the ball dies is when it's going to move the most. And depending on how hard you kick it, you know, how much it moves at the end of the kick is going to change. And obviously how hard the wind's blowing. So, again, to answer your question, that was a long answer to a short question, but to answer your question,
I like those.
I would say around the 25-yard line would have been the max to really be confident that it would be a high-percentage kick. I would say the 20-yard line going toward the lighthouse.
Bill, now it's time for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. The all-new Mercedes-Benz CLA has arrived. See them on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question comes from Sheila. She's on the Cape. She wants to know, well, she says, I had tickets to the game and wound up giving them to my son. Too cold. I'm wondering what your preparation is for these games. When you know cold weather games are coming, what are some of the steps you take to make sure your team isn't obsessed with the weather?
Well, I think the big thing is we practice in whatever the conditions are on a daily basis. So we've practiced in heat, cold, wind, still, rain, light rain, heavy rain, wet fields. So, you know, all those things. You can't really do anything to simulate the heat. There's really not much you can do to simulate the cold. You have to take whatever it is. You know, you can put water on the ball and use a wet ball to make it wetter, but I think the biggest part of rain is not just the wetness of the ball, but the wetness of your hands, your arms, your jersey, as it relates to tackling or also ball security with the ball against a wet surface. So, you know, I think the best practice for those kind of things is to play in them. So that's what we do. Obviously, one of the key things when you're playing on a night like we had last night, I think is at the beginning of the game and even at halftime, is the whole warm-up process, because it's really hard to go out there and warm up when the wind chills at 0 degrees. But you can warm up inside and do a good job of that with your, you know, stretching and some dynamic movements where you're actually running and, you know, not just static stretching in one place, but we're actually moving and getting the blood flowing and getting your muscles loose so that when you go out there, you're ready to perform and you're ready to go and not counting on a long warm-up period out there on the field to get to that point, which is hard to do. So I'd say that's one of the big adjustments that we make in cold weather is just the warming-up process that goes on.
Is there something about Tom specifically that lends itself to cold weather? I mean, his record in cold weather games is fantastic. I guess his record in general is very good, so it's not a huge surprise. But is there something about him specifically that is better in the cold than other quarterbacks?
Well, I'd say some of the things that he has going for him are, I mean, number one, he's mentally tough. I don't think he's affected by the conditions from a mental standpoint. Number two, he has big hands. He can grip the ball. He has, you know, his hands aren't small. It doesn't slide off. He can get around the ball. And number three, he throws a tight spiral. I mean, his ball is very tight, always has been. I was impressed. I think to play here or in this area of the country, you got to throw a tight ball. And, you know, he does. And certainly Testaverde, when we had him at the Jets, and even here, you know, had a very tight ball in Cleveland. You know, it's one of the things. So that the ball really can cut through the wind. And, of course, the wind's going to affect any throw, but it doesn't affect the tight spiral like it does the balls that aren't as tight. And Tom has good spin on his ball. He's got good accuracy. He's got big hands. He can handle a wet ball. He can handle a cold ball. He's got a lot of mental toughness you know, I don't think he's, you know, mentally affected by the conditions like our kickers aren't. You know, Vinatieri wasn't, Steve isn't. I mean, they, you know, no matter what the conditions are, it seemed like they, you know, they kick pretty consistently well in those as Tom throws as quarterback. So I think all those things are part of it. Good technique's part of it, but also mentally just being able to not be affected by it is a big part of it, too.
I would think he'd have some confidence now, too. I mean, he's been doing it so well for so long that he could draw back on his experience and say, hey, I've done this before. Coach, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Congratulations on the win last night.
All right, you're welcome. Appreciate it.